Welcome to Chevron's Lock to Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
This episode, we'll be talking about Singularity, which is season one, episode 14. It was written by Robert C. Cooper, directed by Mario Azzopardi, who are people we are pretty familiar with at this point.
Yep.
It originally aired on Halloween in 1997, so that's kind of fun. It gives us the introduction of Cassandra and another look at Dr. Warner. So that's not our first time with him, Kevin McNulty as Dr. Warner. Before we really get started, let's give our standard spoiler warnings. We will be talking about the entire series generally in these episodes, as well as having some explicit content. So please be forewarned about that before continuing on. That being said, Melanie, what do you have for us as a synopsis?
So the synopsis is SG-1 arrives on planet Honka. SG-1 arrives on planet Honka and learns everyone, natives and Stargate Command personnel alike, has died from a mysterious disease. They find Cassandra, the lone survivor, and take her back to Earth. They soon discover, though, that she has a bomb planted inside of her, set to blow in a matter of time, and removing it is impossible.
Yep.
That is what happens.
That is what happens. That is an accurate synopsis.
So this episode starts off moving pretty quickly. The team is coming into the gate room. It's all dialing up. The wormhole's opening. And we get I love the exchange that we get at the beginning.
Me too. Me too.
I did pull it. All right.
So what exactly are we going to see after this eclipse begins? I mean, it is black and it is a hole.
Well, it might be a black hole.
Okay, let me put that a different way.
No, Daniel, you're right. You can't actually see it. Not the singularity itself. It's so massive, not even light can escape it. But during the totality phase of the eclipse, we should be able to see matter spiraling towards it.
Actually, it's called the accretion disk.
Well, I guess it's easy to understand why the local population would be afraid of something like it. What did you just say?
It's just an astronomical term.
You didn't think the Colonel had a telescope on his roof just to look at the neighbors, did you?
Not initially.
Such a good opener.
It is. It's a really good opener. The team is, like, so fun with each other.
I love that we have Sam geeking out and, like, hardcore sciencing, like, Bill Nye style at Daniel. And then, like, Jack just casually drops in, you know, the fact that he's an astronomer, like, fan as well. And yes, it's a good callback to the pilot. Actually, there's a lot of good callbacks in this episode, like, both callbacks and, like, gags that, like, kind of continue through the series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a good episode for continuity.
It's a great episode. I feel passionately about this episode.
So it's funny because I actually watched this episode with my parents early in the week before I rewatched it to take notes and pull clips and stuff. And it was very different watching it with them. And it was the first episode they've ever watched of Stargate. So I'd given them like a brief catch up on what's happening in the world and stuff. But it did feel a little self-conscious because it is very like 90s sci-fi. Like even that beginning scene with kind of the way that they set up where Jack says something and then Daniel gets 4 seconds into the next thing before doing like a double take mm-hmm. and turning back around. Like it's funny, but it's also kind of hokey 90s sci-fi.
Yes. What did your parents think about it?
My dad fell asleep.
Oh, no.
That's always good. That means he loved it, right?
To be fair, great. Dads always fall asleep and shit.
That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, usually it's my mom that falls asleep and stuff, but we had just done a family reunion that was, like, crazy exhausting, so we were all pretty tired. Mm. But my mom liked it, but had some moments throughout that I'll kind of mention as we get there. So I'll mention them as they come up. So then the team goes through the gate, and SG-7 was supposed to be there to meet them, and they are not. Mm-mm. They don't seem overly concerned by this because it seems like SG-7 maybe had other responsibilities to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And so they start heading towards the observatory, I assume, where the telescope is. And then they come across a very unpleasant dead body. that Jack rolls over, and then we see like
pustules and lesions and something went down.
Yeah, clear signs of something unpleasant. So Jack immediately jumps back, tells them to do mop 4. They all put on their masks and he washes his hands.
Which, fun fact, I googled mop 4. MOP stands for Mission Oriented Protective Posture. MOP 4 is the highest of the protection orders, and it includes mask, gloves, protective body gear, like the whole nine yards, basically.
Yeah, so they didn't actually do MOP 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, because all they had was a little
mask. They didn't do, like, gloves and shit.
I do think they put on gloves.
Yeah.
We just didn't watch them do it.
Yes.
They had gloves in the next scene.
Yes. And Jack decontaminated his hands with his little field kit thingy.
He sure did.
Yeah. Yes, he did. And Teal'c did not put on any protective gear.
Nope.
But he doesn't have to.
Good old Junior. Nope.
Yep. So then they go to search why nobody has noticed this dead guy, and they get to the observatory and find all of SG-7 dead, and Daniel reports that everybody else is dead as well.
It's kind of jarring considering the, like, start we had to the episode. Like, ha ha ha, everyone's joking around, and isn't it great? We're gonna go check out a black hole. It's gonna change the course of human history. Oh my god, everyone's dead!
Yeah.
But
yeah.
To be fair, this isn't the only time this happens either. Oh, this happens multiple times throughout the series. Like, we start with, like, a good, like, happy little moment, and then something immediately goes wrong.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, the tonal shifts in this episode are pretty jarring all the way throughout, honestly.
Whiplashy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we get the titles. So that's, again, that was just like a really weird cold open that started so fun and ended so horribly. And when we come back, they're in the barracks or the observatory. I'm not sure which building, if it's all one building.
Yeah.
And Janet is there with her team, and they have decontaminated the building, and they're estimating that everyone's dead.
I love that we see Janet off-world before we see, like, Hammond off-world.
Yeah.
Well, but Hammond can't really go off-world. I mean, he can, but it's not the best decision.
No, but I just think it's funny that, like, Janet's really only been around for, like, essentially 2-3 episodes, and here we are, off-world. Doo-doo-ba-doo.
Yeah.
And she's the chief, she's the CMO, so I feel like that would be just as high-ranking in some ways, or more high-ranking than others.
Yeah, I mean, we That's will fair. Definitely get there in season 7.
Yeah.
My thoughts about Janet going off-world, I think this is a more justified situation than in season 7 when it happens. Because
That's fair.
Yeah. Like, this, it's not an active combat zone that they know of.
Yeah.
And so she's setting up basically, like, a field hospital, not totally. Just, like, going out into combat. And so, so she says tells the team that she's going to examine them. She starts with Jack because he touched the dead body. And as Jack is walking away, as Jack is walking away, we get this moment.
Allergies, right? Right.
Right.
Again,
I love how he sneezes and everyone looks at him immediately, and then Jack slowly turns around and he's like, we good?
We're good?
It's all fine. Good. Okay.
Again, another great callback to something that kind of has been dropped since, like, the first few episodes of the season. Remember how Daniel has allergies? Remember that, guys?
That's what I wrote in my notes. Oh, yeah. I feel like Michael Shanks got a little better at fake sneezing.
Mm-hmm.
That one was much more convincing than last time.
Also, I feel like it's my sworn duty to point out how hot they all look. They're in their black tees. The sleeves are a little rolled up. They look great. Sam and Jack in particular looking just, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. No, the black tees are a good look for the team. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
So presumably the entire team passes inspection because the next thing we know, they're out tagging bodies.
Yep.
And we get a moment where Daniel talks about the indigenous people and talking about how they had a myth, basically, that this was going to happen. And they had all kind of, like, shoved it aside mm-hmm. as foolish myth. And of course, that's never going to happen. And then look, turns out that maybe they were right.
Yeah, you know, it's a little one of those like awkward like collar pulling moments where colonizers tend to do that shit, you know? Whew. It's not great.
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff in this series. So then, as they're tagging bodies, a little hand reaches out and grabs one of the tags that Sam has just placed. And then there's, like, movement in the high grass. And we...
and I'm we so glad you pulled this and thought it was funny, too.
All right, so I'm just going to play it.
Colonel, someone in the bushes and they won't come out.
She almost whines. It's almost like a whine, like a little kid telling their parent, "Mom, Dad picked on me." Like,
yes. I don't know why I think that's so funny, but like it just got said, and I was like, "Can you imagine turning to your boss, your CEO, and being like, "Hey, there's someone in the bushes, and they won't come out, and I don't know what are you gonna do?"
Especially because he was standing right there watching it happen, and she'd already been calling to the person in the bushes. And so it was maybe, like, she didn't need to say it. Maybe it's
hard to hear through those hazmat suits.
Maybe. And so this is a moment where my mom turned to me and she goes, and she knows that I just went to a con and met Amanda Tapping and that I love her. And so my mom was being all kind of sensitive about it. She goes, is she a bad actress? And I was like... I was like, no, but it's a really bad moment because, like, it was another very classic 90s sci-fi moment of, like, Galaxy Quest style. The woman's job is to, like, state the obvious that everyone else can see for themselves.
Of all the episodes.
I know. So then I was like, just give it the rest of the episode. I promise you won't think she's a bad actress by the end, which was true. She did not. So, but it was a moment where my mom was like,
I just love the fact that your mom was like, is she a bad actress? Even though I know you love her, but like,
I know. It's like, Mom, really? Do you think I would be that big of a fan of her if she were terrible? So they sent Teok to go try and find whoever's in the grass because he is not in a scary yellow outfit.
Yes.
Jack asks him to go look, and he's doing like his angry Jaffa face. And then he walks behind the trees, and when he comes out, he's like got a really sweet look on his face, and he just has completely transformed. Yeah. And I loved it. I thought it was a great moment.
Also, right before that, Jack turning to Teal'c and like telling him to like put on his friendly face again. Great gag that has continued throughout the series of like Teal'c not knowing how to smile and like looking less intimidating. Like, I just big fan of all the callbacks and gags moving forward.
For sure. And especially because it is a great callback, because when we had him trying to smile in First Commandment and Jack gave him the tip of you should maybe work on that. And it seems that he has been working on that because he does a much better job of being approachable.
Yes. Which sure. I also kind of like as a reminder, because I know the next episode is Korai, and it's like a good like humanizing moment too. Like, I don't know. I felt like it was like maybe not intentional, but I just like that this got reminded that Teal'c has this like soft caring side. Like, he's not just the Jaffa warrior, especially because Korai is the next episode.
Yeah, that's a good point. So they get Cassie to come out, and she just is a little girl and she's cute and scared. And then we take her to go see Janet. And Sam is being adorable and trying to comfort her.
Yes, I love maternal Sam.
So I wrote down like a lot that Sam would be like a great mom, and then I put like cries and asterisks over and over again. So yeah,
she would be a good mom. And I think like she has here's where I'm at this episode. Yes, she would be a good mom, she has great maternal instincts, but I also like that Amanda Tapping didn't play it like super like if this all came very naturally for Sam. Like, there are moments when you can see that like she's uncomfortable and awkward, and like it doesn't come like super naturally. And then obviously, I mean, we're gonna get there, but at the end, Teal'c, when he implies the like maternal instincts perhaps, and she's like smooth but no. So I like that Sam is being maternal, but she's not being like boxed in by her maternal instincts.
Right, it's not the only thing that she has to offer the team.
Right,
exactly.
And it doesn't seem like it's more of a kind of, I can't remember the term, an imprinting thing, yes, then Sam's the best at being maternal and sweet, because honestly, anyone on the team could have been the one to bond with her.
Oh, totally.
It sort of just seems to be that she's the first person who really had the time, took the time to take a moment with Cassidy, and Cassie, and Cassie then sort of imprints on Sam.
Yeah. Although imagine AU where Cassie imprints on Jack, or, you know, any of the other members of the team, and I still think you would have had the exact same episode with the exact same decisions happening at the end. Like, that's just who SG-1 is.
Yeah, agreed. So Sam is trying to comfort Cassie and asks to take off her mask, and Janet said it should be okay because it's a bacterial infection. And I was like,
yeah, that's bad science.
Yeah. Well, but then a couple minutes later, she does say that it's not airborne.
Right. Feels like that should have gone in that particular scene. You should have been like, no, it's okay. It's an airborne bacteria. Just don't get too close. That is the line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not airborne. We're good. But she later states it. So I'm going to assume she already knew it when she told Sam that it was okay to take her mask off.
Agreed.
So then there's the heartbreaking moment where Cassie puts the tag on her shirt.
Mm-hmm. God. And because, like, I like that Cassie knows what that means. Like, obviously she wouldn't have known what that means if Sam hadn't told Teal'c you're supposed to put the red tags on the dead bodies. Like, mm-hmm. Which Cassie obviously overheard. Like, it's not like it's just some weird quirk she's doing. It's like, no, she knows exactly what she's doing.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. And Sam's response is, well, it's so heartbreaking. And Amanda Tapping's face.
Yeah.
I just love her face.
I can't imagine what's going on in Cassie's mind, because she's the only one that survived.
Yep.
And so, I mean, in all respects, she thinks she is going to die.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't. Like, that...
Also, like, we never, like, touch on the fact that, like, so Cassie has this bomb inside of her, spoiler alert, but, like, do we ever touch on the fact that, like, does she remember it being implanted in her at some point, or, like, does she remember Near T experimenting on her, like?
Yes, because I want to say that she vaguely brings it up when Near T comes back for her.
I just meant in this episode.
In this episode? No.
Yeah. It's just like...
Sorry, no.
But presumably she would have. I mean, and she later does. But, like, it's just weird that she doesn't mention, like, hey, some alien kidnapped me. Just, no? Okay, cool.
I mean, maybe she blocked it out.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's also traumatized.
Kids block out trauma all the time. Totally. So...
Yeah. So we find out that Cassie has Naquita in her blood.
Our first mention?
Yeah, the first mention of the element from the Stargate being Naquita.
Yeah.
So they gave it a name.
I kind of feel like there should have been more fanfare with that. They really just dropped it in, like, ta-da!
Well, it's just so they don't have to explain it ever again. Like, they can just say Naquita and we're supposed to know what it means.
No, I know. But it's just like, we're the 15th, 14th episode in, and it's like, oh, BT Dubs is going to be a huge part of our series moving forward.
That's true. That is true. So, Janet informs us that everything on the planet is contaminated. The water, the ground, the food. So, that it isn't airborne, but they do need to keep exercising extreme caution on the planet. And, and she also makes a point of stating that Cassie is not a Goa'uld, that she did an ultrasound to verify that.
Yeah.
It is true. And this is the first mention that we have of when they actually check people for Goa'ulds, right?
I don't know about that.
I mean, we've definitely checked before. I still don't think it's been established as standard protocol.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where I was trying to get to.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then Sam gives kind of an impassioned plea, not so much a plea, but arguing her case that there's no need for all of us to go back. Like, if we're safe in this building, someone can stay behind and we can still watch the eclipse.
Yeah. Well, and, like, not just, like, watch the eclipse, but, like, she, like, makes it very clear that the information gleaned from the pictures taken will change the course of human history, which is a pretty lofty and grandiose statement to make.
Yeah, it is. But then Cassie walks out and latches on to Sam. And so Jack's like, well, it's not going to be you staying behind.
Mm-hmm. Again, I would be remiss not to point out in this particular scene, Jack's collar is tug down a little bit, and you can see a lot of, like, sweat collarbone chest area. And if that's your jam, I recommend fast-forwarding to that scene and enjoying that moment.
I'm so glad that Jess can bring you the classic moments of Jack and Neil. Like, it's just, it's great.
Yep.
We should have, like, a segment, like, every episode.
You know, I'll do what I can. There's also tons of dog tag shots in this episode,
We haven't gotten there yet, but Sam has, like, major dog tags with, like, short sleeve black shirt on.
Yep. If that's your jam, please fast and forward to.
Which, that's my jam, mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, so Teal'c and Jack offer to stay behind to observe the eclipse, and the rest of the team dons their yellow suits and takes Cassie to the Stargate.
Yeah.
And Sam and Daniel walk with Cassie between them. It's pretty adorable. And Sam kneels down to kind of comfort her before they go through.
Now, I know no one asked me, but if I was writing this episode, I would have had Jack and Sam going through the Stargate with Cassie and Daniel and T stay behind, but that's fine.
But Jess, you have to have some sort of astronomy nerd there. And so Sam can't stay, therefore Jack has to stay because he's an astronomy nerd.
It's very disappointing for me, however.
Because, I mean, I'm sure you noticed how excited he got when they could finally look at the black hole. Of course. So
did I notice? Who do you think I am? Yes, I noticed.
But I do think that Melanie has answered the question of...
That, and that's why that I didn't write this episode.
Jess, I think if you wrote the series, a lot of things would go way differently, okay?
Daniel fades into the background. Would have been much different.
That's just it, though. I don't think Daniel would have faded into the background if you wrote it. You would have just kept writing him as likable.
Actually, yeah. I probably would have, because I actually think he's very likable. Again, very likable Daniel in this episode.
So I love Daniel so much in this episode, you guys.
He does a good job of being a good friend.
I'll agree with that.
However, this is season one. We're on Stars. Showtime. I would have taken full advantage of the fact we were on Showtime.
Yes. Yes, you would have.
Yes. And I'll let you fill in the blanks.
So they get to the gate room and it has been set up for decontamination. They, like, get sprayed.
I super appreciate the fact that they did that.
Yeah. I think it's, like, the only time they do that, but good on them for doing it this one time. Mm-hmm. And so then they take off their gear and poor Cassie looks so overwhelmed and scared, which it seems like the culture she was leaving was, like, an agrarian society still.
Yeah.
It had to be such a shock for her to then land in this underground bunker. I can't.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Surrounded by cement. Yeah.
Yeah. No sight of nature or the outside world. I can't even fathom what is going through that poor little girl's brain.
Yeah.
And then they take her to her room, which is not an improvement.
No.
Which is more cement.
And, like, Sam gets so, like, flustered. Like, I know it's not much, but we're gonna, like, dress it up. It's gonna be great.
Yeah. It's really sweet. She does not know what to say or how to improve that situation, which, who would? It's a horrible situation.
Yes, it is.
And then, so Sam tries to leave, and Cassie won't let her leave. Mm-mm. And it's so heartbreaking and adorable, and Sam tries to be like, oh, I can watch you from the camera, which I doubt that Cassie has any concept of what that means,
which is why she, like, follows it up with this, like, military, like, eye contact, like, trying to, like, do this eye gesture, eyes on you kind of thing. I realize we're all doing the gesture,
we're but all, this is
the
all podcast. Three of us.
But I thought it was really adorable.
It was adorable. Then the next scene is the briefing room where they have, like, a monitor set up that they're watching Sam in the room with Cassie. And the general observes that it seems that Cassie has bonded with Sam. And Daniel says that he doesn't blame her. It's kind of sweet. I mean, he's more talking about the trauma that she's been through. But Janet mentions that she thinks they might be responsible for the disease that killed everyone on the planet.
Again, very collar-pulling, yikes, boy oh boy. That mimics our history.
But this isn't the first time not the first time, but it happens again throughout the series we think that we do this again. But yes, I agree.
Totally.
Yeah, well, and it's a sensible conclusion to come to for Janet in the moment. But the general's main concern is that they didn't bring it back with them, which Janet feels very confident that they didn't. In fact, she thinks instead that Cassie could hold the key to the cure, not only for whatever disease was on the planet, but maybe some other diseases that already exist on Earth.
Technically, she was mostly right about that.
Yeah, I guess so.
And that Cassie didn't have the, like, she was confident that she didn't bring back the bacteria.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They just brought back a bomb.
Yeah.
Did we ever find out why Cassie was immune?
I can only assume it's because Neer-T made her so.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That would make sense. I didn't know if we ever got, like, clear, concise evidence or, like,
they say
boom, this is why this happened.
They say as much later that when Daniel talks about her being used against them, that
Trojan horse.
Yeah. So, but they also mentioned that we still have no idea why SG-7 didn't give us any warning that this was happening.
Right.
Like, what kind of disease hits so hard and so fast that SG-7 couldn't get a message through?
Right.
But
the answer is coming.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So, but at this point, that's one of the mysteries they're still trying to unravel.
I will say, if I could knock this episode for one thing, I feel like it wasn't super, the connections weren't very clear, or, like, the mysteries to be solved weren't super clear. Like, obviously, like, Cassie has the bomb in her, how do we defuse the bomb? That was very obvious. But, like, the back and forth of, like, why was SG-7 not warning us? And then, like, why does Cassie have the bomb? Like, I feel like those things kind of got lost in translation up until, like, the last, like, 8 minutes.
I thought overall there was a bit of a pacing problem with the episode, and going back to some of the early episodes, there was very jarring scene switches and weird ones, which I'll mention when we get, I mean, it's kind of coming up next after this next scene, because the next scene is in Cassie's room, which they do kind of a really unique transition where it, like, zooms in on the monitor where Sam is interacting with Cassie, and then we go actually into the room where Sam is with Cassie.
Yes, I noted that as well. I thought that was really cool.
The music, though, like, so the theme that they set up for Cassie and Sam kind of reminds me of the music in Twin Peaks. It's almost, like, kind of a weird, sickly sweet.
Yeah. They laid it on kind of thick.
Yeah.
They're bonding.
They are. Sam has an elephant puppet.
As you do.
She's teaching Cassie how to eat a hot dog.
We learned that
That was adorable.
That Sam is a mustard-only kind of gal.
As she should be, but she doesn't put it, like, she puts it on the bread and not on the hot dog, which I thought was kind of strange.
But maybe, I mean, to me, that just means that she has fixed up hot dogs for her nibblings before. Because...
maybe.
Her because nibblings?
That's the gender-neutral plural noun for nieces and nephews.
I have never heard that in my entire life.
I haven't either, but I assumed she was talking about her
nibbles.
Her brother's children. I just never heard nibblings before.
That sounds like an STD.
That's an actual word, and I'm trying to make it more widely known because I have nieces and nephews, and saying nibblings is so much easier than saying the nieces and nephews.
What you got? Oh, I came down with a case of the nibblings. It's okay. They're treating me with one course of antibiotics. I'll be nibbling free. That girl gave me nibblings.
Anyway, the way that she puts the condiment, the mustard on the hot dog.
So I'm going to try and guess what Chelsea was going to say. So the way that they put the condiment on the hot dog is to show that there isn't really anything on the hot dog, so maybe the niblet will eat them.
And maybe.
Because I know from experience that Amelia doesn't like condiments on anything, especially if she sees the condiment.
I mean, I've also seen, like, when you're buying a hot dog, like, in New York or whatever, that's where they don't put it on the dog, they put it on the side so you can fill your shit with other... So I don't think it's weird that they chewed it on the side. That's a weird thing that you noticed, I think.
Are you surprised?
No, like, I don't know. I just feel like I think that was, like, a normal place to put mustard.
I don't know. I always like do it on a zigzag.
Should that be like part of our episode discussion? It's like, hey, singularity app is down. We're talking about the proper placement of mustard. Let us know in the comments. Are you a condiment on the dog or on the bread kind of listener?
I mean, why not? You can put it on there right now, Jess. Just pop it up.
I mean, right now.
The thing is, though, with kids, they're less likely to spill it all over if it's on the bread instead of the hot dog.
That's also true. That's fair. Okay.
So then we get a very awkward cut to Teal'c and Jack in the observatory, and they just have an inane conversation about black holes that accomplishes nothing for the episode in general.
I think it was for filler. I think they needed something to fill the time, and they were like, well, let's just have Jack kind of explain what a black hole is, but not really explain what a black hole is, but kind of explain what a black hole is.
Wait, time out. Before we get back there, I'm gonna go back to Sam and,
we skipped the picture.
Sorry, yes, the picture.
Oh, shit, we did.
Yes. Let's talk about, so Cassie is, like, in a classic 90s Law & Order SVU kind of way, using art as a way to express the trauma that she's been through. And it's a picture of her on her planet and crying, but just surrounded by dead bodies. And Sam kind of like, it's very dark, very bleak.
Oh, it's very dark, yeah.
And Sam, you know, tries to comfort her by pulling the drawing her way, and she grabs a brush and she dips her brush into some paint and then draws a little Sam stick figure next to Cassie. And tells her that that's Sam and that Cassie's not alone.
Yeah,
which is absolutely lovely and heartbreaking all at the same time.
Yes. And again, another great callback going, not callback, but it's going to be a gag moving forward that Sam can't draw to save her fucking life. And that stick figures are her forte, because that will come back when we meet Marin.
Look, Sam can do a lot of things. She can blow up planets and do alien tech and stuff. But drawing, I mean, hey, it's not for everybody. I can't draw. So
I'm sure she can draw plans and stuff for her inventions and whatnot.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. Yes. No, well, yeah, but...
And at the very beginning is a stick figure Sam with, like, a little clipboard. Like, we can do it! And then she goes through with her technical drawings.
All right. Yeah, so...
Sorry, I'm envisioning this happening now. It's crazy.
This is a stupid poll. I'm not putting this poll up. I've just texted it out, and I was like, this is dumb.
No, do it.
No, it's too late.
Do it!
Nah, I'm good.
You could save it in the draft, so I would have put it up.
Because the question is, how do you put condiments on your hot dog? On the dog or along the bun? And it sounds too sexual for me.
Wow. Wow.
You should have said something like during our singularity talk.
I guess I had that too. We're debating how Sam put the mustard on her hot dogs. We want to know, do you squirt it on the dog or on the bun?
Yeah, a little bit.
Listen, someone's got to put the explicit content in this episode to make it worth the warning, and I'm taking that upon myself. Yes. Now we can get back. I mean, we already talked about Teal'c and Jack and their shit. Do you want to have more about the black hole?
Yeah, I mean, we can just mention it.
I just thought the way that he went about it was kind of pure, because he was just kind of like, yeah, it's a black hole, and it is black, and it sucks up light, and you can't see it. It's like, okay.
I love how Teal'c acts like that. He's like, oh, cool, thanks, as if that was real good information that Jack just gave him. But it reminds me of one of the complaints we had about earlier episodes, where occasionally it just feels like they're reminding us where everybody else is. Like, there's no purpose to this scene other than to be like, oh yeah, Jack and Teal'c are still on the planet.
Well, I mean, because they're not part of the main storyline yet, so, you know, we do have to be kind of reminded that they're still around.
Yeah, I also like the fact that, like, it blows my mind that Jack is, like, the accretion disk in the beginning, but then, like, struggles to kind of explain what a black hole is in this episode.
Yeah.
But I guess also, like, maybe it's harder to, like, explain what a black hole is in, like, lay terms. Because, like, what the fuck is a black hole? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we have a vague understanding of what it is, but
maybe... I mean, he could ask Sam if he really wanted to know. There. I know. So he has to just kind of do, I mean, what he has picked up on the History Channel or Discovery Channel or whatever channels were around in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I think they both were.
Or probably, I mean, I would assume the Air Force has some kind of class on, like, basic...
I would assume so.
Yeah, well, and I think if he knows accretion disk, then he probably knows the basics of how a black hole forms as a collapsing star, and the gravity is so strong that it pulls in everything around it. Like,
yeah, see? Just like what Chelsea said. Doesn't everyone know that?
I would think Jack would know it based on his other knowledge.
No, no, totally.
I mean, he knows it later, so I would assume he knows it now.
Yeah. Maybe Sam showed up with, like, you know how she did the apple thing with, like, the wormhole? Maybe yeah. She had another, like, fruit prop for the black hole. This strawberry is... I'm out.
Okay, great.
Okay, so then we come back to the SGC, and Sam and Cassie are snuggling in her room, and we finally learned that Cassie's name is Cassie here.
Was actually Cassandra.
I'm sorry, Cassandra, excuse me. Sam asks her how she's doing, and Cassie says, "I hurt," which at first I was like, oh God, like emotionally. And then she like put her hand over her heart. And I was like, oh God, emotionally, she means emotionally. And then, but nope, they next shot is them, in the med bay. And it turns out she's got a potassium deficiency and an irregular heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah, which, so, there was the scene with Cassie and Sam where she finally talks is adorable, and Daniel coming in to offer to sit with her.
Oh, yes.
So that Sam can go do who knows what, because then it gets thrown by the wayside because Cassie expresses that she's in physical pain.
Yeah.
So, basically, Janet checks her up and says that she seems fine. There's no fluid in her lungs or anything to explain the pain in her chest. Other than the fact that she has a potassium deficiency, which could be causing an arrhythmia, which would maybe make her feel pain. Mm-hmm. And so, but then she just, like, lets them walk out of the room. And I'm like, if she has a severe enough potassium deficiency to be causing an arrhythmia, she should really be giving her a potassium drip, like, or at least a banana. Give the girl a banana.
Yeah.
But so then on their way out of the room, Cassie freezes and then kind of collapses, and they put her back on the bed and she's crashing basically.
And we get the worst case of fake CPR I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I've definitely seen worse.
I mean, yes, you're right. There's worse, but that was pretty bad.
Janet's was okay.
It's the second chick.
It was the second chick.
I was like, oh, girl. Like your elbows are like popping out like doing the chicken dance or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It is hard to do fake CPR because you can't go crushing some person's chest who is not in need of CPR.
Correct.
So, yeah, it's bad. Definitely Janet does a better job of making it look convincing.
Way to go, Terrell Rotherty.
Indeed. Other than that, though, I actually thought it was a semi-decent run code in terms of, like, what was happening. But then they tubed her. But then never attached the bag to the tube that they had. And I was like,
critical.
That seems important. But
although you don't necessarily need the tube you don't need the bag if you're breathing on your own, but you just need a clear, help me here.
Airway.
Airway. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I thought you only need the bag if you're not breathing on your own.
Right. But if she was breathing on her airway on her own, then you would assume a clear airway.
I was the airway obstructed. You're correct. Yeah.
But, I mean, mostly they were just in the process of running a full code, but then she came back. And Janet listens to her heart again, and it's like, oh no, something terrible. And then hands the stethoscope over to Sam, and Sam listens, and it's like the super weird, like, whirring. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. My closed caption just said whooshing sound.
That's what mine said. I was like, what? Is there a Stargate in there? Like, at all?
That's co-whoosh, please.
Oh, my bad. So sorry. The first time I watched this episode, though, I missed the whooshing sound. So I was so confused when they were like, listen to this. And I was like, it's a heartbeat. What am I listening for?
Yes, very critical.
So Janet orders a chest x-ray. And then they throw that chest x-ray up on the light box, and it is backwards.
That's just how good Janet is. She can do it backwards. She was showing off.
I would just, it doesn't matter that much, but it, the thing doesn't need to be turned the right way to see that there's a weird, creepy spider growth on the child's, somewhere in the child's chest cavity, so...
I mean, that's true.
And it wasn't there 10 hours ago.
Yes. That's important information.
Which, what, did we figure out what made it grow? Was it because they defibbed her, or?
That was part of the guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And that they gave her iron supplements.
Iron. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay.
So then, Dr. Warner comes along to scope it, to check out what this thing is that's growing in her chest.
He can do spinal surgery, and he can do heart scopes.
Yeah. I mean, at least it's a scope and not an open heart surgery.
Open heart. Okay, you know what's so funny about that is I watch the scene, and, like, whenever it is two scenes later when we see Cassie in bed, like, recovering, I was like, she should not be there. She should be in the ICU. Like, what is she doing? I was like, oh, no, 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 no. It was an open heart. It was a scope. She's probably fine. I mean, probably still should be under some medical supervision, but... At least it was an open heart.
Yeah. No, she should definitely still be attached to monitors, but we'll assume that Janet's monitoring her closely.
Yes.
So Dr. Warner scopes the mass, and it seems to be a mixture of organic material and metal. Mm-hmm. And when he gets close to it to, like, try and biopsy it, Cassie's heart rate and blood pressure and stuff, all of her vitals start going crazy. And Dr. Warner seems pretty... unconcerned about that.
Mm-hmm. He was pretty chill.
Yeah.
Like, way more chill than you should be.
Typical surgeon.
He's a surgeon, yeah. I mean. Yeah. And so, but then she full on starts crashing right as he's taking the biopsy. So he pulls the scope out, and they go to shock her to bring her back. But then once they pull the scope out, her vitals recover on their own.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so they basically draw the conclusion that we can't remove the object.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate also, though, that, like, I know she was, like, crashing and, like, in danger, but I also appreciate him, like, he was so close just to, it's clearly very vital that they get a biopsy sample to understand what this is. So I do appreciate that he pushed a little further than maybe he should have for the sake, like, of the betterment of the patient in this case, and the SGC, but then did abort and pull out and, like, fix the situation.
Yeah, well, and honestly, that's fairly true to, like, a surge usually in an operating room, although Janet isn't the anesthesiologist, but usually in an operating room, the anesthesiologist is the person who is in charge of the patient and their vitals and looking out for their welfare, while the surgeon is much more focused on whatever field is in front of them. And so the fact that Dr. Warner is much more objective focused, and it's other doctors that are telling him he needs to back off is actually pretty realistic.
Yeah. And we get a shot. I'm pretty sure it is the anesthesiologist. We get a shot of them upping her anesthesia. Mm-hmm.
Mm, yes.
So, yeah. So they basically realize that we can't touch the object that's in her. So we're not going to be able to remove it because it seems to be able to kill her if you try to interfere with it. So that's not great.
No, bad news.
But Dr. Warner did get the biopsies, so way to go, Dr. Warner.
MVP.
And then after that, is that when Sam's with Cassie again?
Yeah,
Sam tells her that she'll take her and show her the cool things of, you know, the world or whatever, which I thought was kind of a cool callback to Jack telling Teal'c that he would show him all the coolness of Earth.
Yeah.
And then I was like, they go on vacations together, like SG-1 vacations?
Yes.
Do they take Cassie?
Yes. Yeah. Next question.
Yes.
Is this also the same scene where Sam is, like, crying.
Is this military?
This, not yet. So this is when Cassie wakes up not calling yet. For her mom.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And Sam responds to her. It's a very heart-wrenching moment. But Sam does leave the room and has a moment with Daniel. It's not the military one, but I did pull that clip.
If you want, I can sit with her tomorrow for a few hours.
No, we're okay.
Okay.
I just want to do this.
Okay. But I guess what I'm saying is that you don't have to do this alone.
Thanks.
Daniel's such a good friend. Why couldn't he be a good friend for, like, the rest of it?
Yeah.
Daniel's a good guy in this episode.
I love that scene so much. I love the kind of the comparison between Sam and Daniel, because Sam was reading a book sitting next to Cassie's bed. And then when Sam leaves the room, Daniel's sitting there reading a book waiting for her. And it's adorable. And then he gives her this sweet moment. And so it's funny because going into this episode, in my brain, I just remembered, like, at the end of the very blink and you'll miss it, Sam and Jack of it all. And so I was like, I wonder if my mom will pick up on that. And then we started watching it and I was like, she might pick up on something else. And she did. Because after this scene, she goes, does something happen between those two later in the series? And I was like, I could see how you might think that. Mm-hmm. But no.
All that to say, like, obviously I don't ship them in any way, shape, or form and be all on my feelings about Daniel. But I stand by my assessment, like, even in that first pilot episode, there's chemistry there. Like, they're clearly friendly. They're friends. Like, the actors themselves have chemistry. So, like, I don't find it implausible or impossible that people do ship them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're wrong, but...
No, ship and let ship, Jess. Don't tell people that they're wrong.
I refuse.
You can do whatever you want.
No, I'm going to send a non-hate to everyone who ships. So. That's the mature thing to do, Mel.
Sam and Daniel shippers, I see you and I validate you.
Just like the Jack and Daniel shippers, we also see you and validate you as well.
I refuse to do this. I won't participate in this. I refuse.
Jess is going to do Jess. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And we love Jess because she brings us the Sam Jack awesomeness.
It's my only job.
It's not your only job.
Yeah, I know.
But we appreciate it about you.
Also, I want to be very clear. I am joking. It has come to my attention that my brand of humor doesn't always come across as joking. Ship and let ship. I'm not a hater. There will be no non-hate sent for me. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
She's totally lying.
Shut the fuck up.
Jess does not send a non-hate.
No, she doesn't believe in it. And she's talking in the third person.
She sends it to me all the time.
You fucking liar.
Okay, so back to Jack.
Moving on.
Back to Daniel being adorable, and they're right up in each other's space, and Sam touches him on his arm, and it's a great moment.
Yes.
And they kind of share some meaningful looks here. I love the SG-1 connection in general. I love, like, I ship Sam and Jack too, but I love any time that we round out some of those other relationships better as well. And I truly, like, after watching this episode, I just felt so much how much we were robbed of this friendship of Sam and Daniel for the rest of the series, because they really don't let it develop as well as they could have.
I agree.
They don't.
Well, they also do some weird shit to Daniel's character, in my opinion. I actually kind of love season one Daniel. I mean, with the exception of, like, Torment of Tantalus, and I'm sure other episodes I can't think of, he actually is a very good character in season one. And I would argue in season two as well. I don't really know when the turning point is, but early season Daniel is good Daniel.
Yeah. So then we get another fun, special little cut to Jack and Teal'c, because it is time for the eclipse.
It's not just time, it's showtime.
I pulled it. I was going to use it as our closing clip.
Yay! Oh, God damn it.
But I can use it now if you want.
No, it's okay. Do it as a closing clip. I spoiled it.
No, it's... We were going to talk about it when we got to it.
It's so cute.
I wrote in my notes, Jack plus science equals sexy.
Yes. He's such a little, like, space dork, and I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I call them an astronomy geek, and yes. nothing anyone says can change my mind about that.
No. And, like, his little whoa when he, like, sees the eclipse.
Yes!
Oh! He's so cute. Fuck everyone who says that Sam and Jack don't have shit in common. Look at that shit, okay?
Yep.
Fuck you all.
So, I did think it was interesting that the eclipse reaches totality, but there's definitely still sunlight coming in through the observatory. Whatever.
Don't let the facts get in the way of the story. It's fine.
It did make me wonder if they filmed it at an actual observatory. It wasn't so much a nitpick as then I was like, oh, I wondered if they actually went and filmed this at an observatory and there was daylight out and they couldn't make it not daylight.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I do not know. But instead of seeing a black hole or whatever the fuck it is they're looking at, they see a gold attack vessel. What's it called again?
A attack.
Attack.
A attack.
Which is confusing.
Just call it an attack vessel.
But we didn't get that name yet. It's just called a gold attack vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we had even gotten that bit yet. Oh, no, we did. Wait.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No,
we jumped ahead. We're ahead.
Wait, where are we? This is a really quick scene. All it is Jack says it's showtime, the eclipse reaches totality, and then it cuts back to the observation room where they're talking about the
mess. Sam's... Yeah. And then Sam does her little science experiment.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I just didn't take a note about that at all.
Yeah, so...
About the science experiment?
Yeah, no.
Dude, that's like an important part, man.
I know it's important. I just have anything to say about it.
Dude.
Yes.
Lab experiment. Oh, yeah, it's irresponsible.
I don't think it was irresponsible. She took appropriate precautions.
Okay.
I mean, she used microscopic sample sizes and put it in, like, a room... A lead line.
Like way below, yeah. Like way below.
I just feel like if you'd be messing with an alien element, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was also a bit of a time crunch, so I don't know where else they would take it.
I mean, but again, though, she also used like super microscopic levels of it, so you would think it wouldn't do that much damage.
And yet, and here we are.
I didn't...
Yeah. I would,
an element.
I would just say that she performed an experiment and nobody was injured, so it was successful. But basically, we discover that the two sides of the mass are, on one side, it's a mixture of iron and potassium that must have been gathering out of her blood. And then the other side is Naquadah, which also was gathering out of Cassie's blood. And there's decaying organic matter in between, and when they reach each other, it is going to be a catastrophic explosion. Yes.
Volatile.
Kaboom.
So yeah, Cassie's a walking nuke. That's special.
Poor Cassie. As if her day hadn't been rough enough.
I know, right? Jeez, this girl.
Yeah.
So then it cuts back to the observatory, and we see the dot.
And now we see the vessel.
The Hattak.
Yeah. And we see the dot on the readout, and... Without moving the telescope, they see it through the telescope.
It's a magic telescope.
It's special.
It was exactly where it needed to be.
Uh-huh. I actually don't totally know about that. Maybe it did come right across their field of vision while they were looking at the black hole. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. They're
very lucky, SG-1. Things just seem to happen for them.
I mean, they do, though. I mean, you're not wrong. and then we get, the first mention of Nirti, right?
Yes.
Not quite.
Oh, no, not yet.
That's in
not
the
yet.
Next
one.
We go back to the observation room.
It goes back and forth a lot here, because then it goes...
So I didn't take a note there either.
I pulled
this
the clip.
This is where Daniel, they call her, a Trojan horse or something?
Yeah. So I pulled that clip. This is Daniel in the briefing room with Hammond and Janet.
It's a setup. It has to be. The Goulds wiped out every last living person on that planet except Cassandra. And then they made us think that it was our fault because they knew we wouldn't leave her there. They knew we would bring her back here. And they used their technology to put that thing inside of her.
It's like they designed a way for us to help them create the device after she came through the Stargate, so we wouldn't detect it until it was too late.
We gave her iron supplements. We may even have turned the device on with a jolt of electricity when we resuscitated her.
You're saying it's meant to destroy us?
At least this complex. The threat to the Goa'ulds, the Stargate.
They used that little girl like a Trojan horse.
I'm mad too, yeah. Daniel.
Oh. Yeah, I love how, angry everyone is, on Cassie's behalf. Like, they're almost more concerned, that Cassie got used than they are for their own well-being. At least for now.
Because they used an innocent child to, you know,
and killed,
carry out this. Oh, and they killed a whole bunch of
people. And they killed SG-7. Yes. Like, they're people too. Like, yeah, it's not good. Those fucking Goulds, man.
Yeah. SG-7 added to the list of dead SG teams. Okay. SG-7 R.A.P. now has the most deaths. They're leading with 4.
With 4? Yeah.
Poor SG-7.
And I mean, it's pretty. We don't really get any mention of them being lost in this. But, yeah, so. Then we go to Cassie's room and she seems ill, and we get another sweet Sam and Daniel moment where they are all up in each other's personal space, but it's a really, really sweet moment. I appreciate Daniel so much in this moment.
How could they do this?
Well, to a Gould, she's not as we see her. She's a tool. Her death is a very cheap way to get rid of us.
I know I am supposed to be detached.
Who said that?
Sometimes I forget you're not military.
Yeah, that's a really good scene.
It is. And in that moment, I'm so grateful for Daniel and that he isn't military.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we kind of harp on the fact that he's not military and how out of place he is. But in that moment, it's like, thank you, Daniel, for being there and just letting Sam have emotions and...
Yep.
It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good moment. And it's like a good, like, setup, I guess, for like, because we don't really get a lot of episodes like this, where like, there's a member so emotionally invested in like, the person they've met off planet or something, like, in the same way that Sam is in this episode. And it's nice that we get that. Maybe that's a turn off for some people, but I really enjoyed the fact that we got this, like, softer side of Sam.
Yeah, and really the softer side of Daniel. Daniel's kind of soft, but the whole, it's like you said, everyone in the SGC seems personally offended by them using this girl. And it's like, yes, they are all in danger, and that's a terrible thing, but it's like they're more focused on how horrible it is to use this innocent little girl.
Yeah.
So then we go back to the observatory, and that's when we get the identification of it being near T's Vestal.
Yes.
And that's it. Like, we go back, identify it as near T's Vestal, and then it's back to General Hammond's office.
I also like that, and the same thing happened with Hathor, I'm pretty sure. Oh, no, the same thing happened with Drolinar, where we get, like, a gendered, like, oh, it's he. Mm-hmm. Like, Jilinar was a he, or, like, Nir T gets referenced as he, but then we, like, when we actually meet them, nope, in lady bodies.
Well, I think that in general, they're pretty gender neutral, the symbiotes, in terms of,
Right. I just meant, like, maybe it's because, like, when that symbiote was in one body, it was a he, like, but then he jumped symbiotes, or like the symbiote jumped to a new host or something.
Yeah, so Teal'c tells a story about Nir-T,
right?
And maybe then Nir-T had a male host, yeah,
right. I just thought it was interesting that, or maybe they didn't think that far ahead, they didn't think they're gonna bring Nir-T back. I don't know, I just thought it was interesting.
I like the,
I'm really glad that they did, so
yeah,
Yes. Some good Sam Jack episodes there. Thanks, Nir-T.
I like the kind of the gender swappiness of
Goa'uld
and Tok'ra.
Oh, no, yeah. I think it's pretty. I think that's a cool little...
No, I like it.
It's like, it's kind of sneaky, progressive.
Yeah. Intentional or not, yeah. I don't know. But I thought I liked it.
So, yeah. So then we go to the general's office and we get the kind of heartbreaking reality. And establishing that Hammond is in charge for a reason, that he's capable of making the decisions that need to be made.
Look, sir, I know this decision isn't easy for you.
In fact, the decision is quite easy. The consequences are what's difficult.
It's a really good line.
It is, yeah.
It is.
Because...
Who wrote this again?
Robert C. Cooper.
Robert, yeah.
Way to go, Robert C. Cooper.
Yeah, this is a very good episode. Well... So, yeah, because the reality is that it really is one life against who knows how many millions that we have. We can't really even totally comprehend just how catastrophic this explosion could be.
Yeah.
And it's a tragedy is that this little girl is wrapped up in it. But General Hammond is right. Like, that's easy math.
Yeah. It just, you know, goes against everything that, like, I feel like a lot of the times when we see either SG-1 or, like, even other, like, sci-fi movies, like, that's what makes you human is that you're not willing to sacrifice the one for millions. But I guess this is the reality, which is that sometimes you do.
Right.
For sure.
I mean,
which is, again, very bleak.
It is. It's incredibly bleak.
But I mean, it's the truth, though. I mean, you know, I mean, are you going to allow this one little girl to kill millions?
No, but you have to live with it on your conscience, let you know that, like, you let a little girl die.
Listen,
exactly.
I know. It's true.
And I'm sure that General Hammond has made plenty of choices definitely. Like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this wasn't hard for him to do either, but I'm sure he had to think of, I mean, he probably didn't have to think about it very long, right. But.
Well, it's clear that he's made decisions like this before because he knows. He's like, the decision is easy, but he already knows that he's going to have to live with the consequences and that's not going to be easy for him, for any of them.
Right.
So then it keeps accelerating the back and forth. And as much as some of the swapping earlier bothered me, I actually think they do a good job with the pacing really leading up when it gets to the point where Jack and Teal'c are running and things are getting really intense with Cassie back in the SGC and it's going back and forth.
Yeah.
Because basically, so once they realize that there's a Gold attack vessel coming and then it releases its death gliders, Jack and Teal'c are like, oh crap. And Jack throws on his gear and they run. And I love that.
And they zag.
They zig and zag. And then they manage to like find cover for a minute and take a break to have a conversation about who Nearty is. Which just really made me laugh. I was going to pull the clip, but there's so much background noise of like the gliders and stuff. Basically.
It's also a great case of Teal'c being like, oh yeah, here's some more information that I have that I need to like give you to fill in this story.
Yeah. I mean, this one at least is like, oh, he sees Nearty's vessel and it's like, oh yeah, here's a thing about Nearty that's relevant. But it still makes me laugh. They're like getting shot at and like, okay, well here, let me tell you all about Nearty. And they make the connection basically that Nearty uses Trojan horses or you know, something similar. And Jack immediately jumps to, oh, the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So they go sprint.
Which is a logical conclusion.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a giant leap, especially because that's the way Jack's brain works. Like, he sees those kind of tactics. And so in the meantime, back in the SGC, the general's like, we got to send her back. And they kit her up and they're starting to dial out and it's going back and forth. And Teal'c is dialing out and Sergeant Harriman is like, telling us the chevrons are encoded, and when it gets to chevron 6, there's an incoming wormhole.
Yep.
And the rest of the team is down there waiting. And the wormhole, I love this moment. So the wormhole engages, and before we see that it's Jack coming through, Sam and Janet, like, lean over and cover up Cassie.
Yeah.
Who has collapsed.
She slipped into a coma.
Yeah. Yes. And they, like, cover her up, and it's so sweet. And also,
science moms.
Janet and Sam Shippers, I see you.
And you're valid.
Because I love Sam and Janet, and in my head, they do basically become her two moms.
Yeah.
Even if we don't get to see it as much as I would like.
Yeah.
Can I sidetrack this conversation real quick?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so I recently made a TV trope gift set for Sam, and one of the tropes that I picked was heterosexual life partners or something like that, and it was Sam and Janet, obviously, and so someone reblogged it, and they go, I like the heterosexual life partners thing, but you chose, like, the gayest part of the whole series for them to put it together, and I was like, fair. Fair. Because it was for Cassie's birthday.
And they're in their, like, little sweaters.
Yes.
Okay, continue.
So then Jack comes storming down the gate and he rips off the helmet of his, or his gas mask, and he's like, get the kid away from the gate. It's very hero moment. Yeah.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah. And there's like debris that comes. Girl, let me tell you about how good he looks. Because it's real good. That's all I have to say.
Is it like in depth, or is that it?
He's like sweaty. He's just been running. A lot of glistening action hero shot from like underneath. It's all working like, for
rips
me.
The thing off. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hot.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. So then now the team is all back together, yes. Which I always appreciate.
Thank God.
And we go to the briefing room. And are combining all the information. So basically, at this point is when they decide, oh, the Goa'uld killed SG-7. They prevented them from warning us what was happening. And they set up this girl. And now we establish that. So we thought it was just a timer that the bomb was going to go. But if we get it or try to send her through the gate, apparently it's going to explode then too. So it's got like a proximity trigger as well as a timer.
Yeah.
The Nirti is pretty thorough in trying to blow us up.
She's super booby-trapped. That's that's basically correct.
And yeah, so they're trying. And I love the moment where Jack is like, couldn't we take her to the... And then Hammond is like, knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah, the nuclear facility. It's only 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
And he picks up the red phone. And the first time he picked up a red phone was earlier. And my dad was awake for that moment. And he laughed. He's like, what? I was like, Dad, he has a red phone and he talks to the president.
Again, that's also a very like 90s sci-fi trope, I think.
Yeah. But there's this moment in this scene where they're discussing, okay, we're going to take her to this nuclear facility. Hammond gets on the phone and he asks for the Secretary of Defense. And then it zooms in on Sam. So you get like the wide shot of the group and it zooms in on Sam. And it's a great moment because she's in military mode and you can tell that she's really trying to rein in her emotions, mm-hmm. but you can still see it. And also, she's super hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to take away from the character and the moment she's having as a very well-rounded character, but she looks really good.
Her hair was really good this episode, too. I made note of it.
It really was.
It was.
She got, like, freshly cut or something. I don't know. It looked great.
It did. It looked very good. I actually noted the same thing when they were in, like, the next scene when they're in the transport.
Yes!
And she's holding Cassie.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's so sad.
It's so sad. The Cassie looks so small, like, wrapped up in that blanket. And, like, Sam is just holding her, like a mother.
Yeah, and we get a... And so it's Sam is sitting next to Daniel and then Jack. And we get a moment of Daniel just looking kind of concerned over at Sam. Which, again, I just think they carried that thread through the whole episode of Sam has completely invested herself in Cassie and Daniel sees that is going to be hard on her. And so Daniel has kind of appointed himself as Sam's watcher, and I really love it.
Yeah. Again, I would have loved to have seen Jack in that role, but I'll take it.
I would have loved to see them be more consistent with that beautiful friendship through the rest of the series.
Preach.
So then they get to the nuclear facility, and Sam carries Cassie in, and she's supposed to be like 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
Amanda Tapping's strong. She does not look like she's struggling at all.
Mm-mm. No, mm-mm. Not at all.
I have an 11-year-old son, and I mean, he's all gangly, and I can still carry him like that, but it's kind of awkward.
Mm-hmm. Another thing we can add to Man Tapping's hotness.
Yeah. So they get to the end of the facility. They call the elevator. And we get Jack.
I can take her from here now, Captain.
No, sir. It's okay.
Just a little moment.
Yes. Oh, the last 5 minutes of the episode. Okay, two things. One, Melanie started watching Stargate way before I did. Like, Mel was like almost done with season one by the time I started season one, and this is back when I was still using Snapchat, and Melanie Snapchatted me.
I was in season three, but all right, okay, whatever.
Melanie Snapchatted me this scene in like long Snapchat chunks. And so I was just watching. I had no context. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. All I saw was, like, Jack desperately, like, calling for Sam through that intercom. And, like, obviously, like, Sam's, like, a life or death situation. And I didn't know what was going on. But that was literally the Snapchat where I was like, I'm gonna watch this fucking show, aren't I?
You're so welcome. I'm so glad that I could do that for you.
So this is what I texted to you guys the first time I watched this. Just starting at the end, there was some stuff in the beginning about painting herself into the depressing picture and stuff. I said, so Cassie's a bomb, no big deal. I feel like Jack should have gone down the elevator with Sam. She's not going to want to leave that girl alone to die. And then I said, holy shits, dudes. And then at the end I said, that was a good ep. I thought they were going to cavalry Sam there for a bit. Basically, like, I thought they were going to give her
that
Ming-Na Wen's storyline on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where she has to kill a little girl.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's not what happened. Spoiler alert.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would have been way dark. That would have been
very dark.
I really thought they were going to do it for a hot second.
Oh.
I did.
Oh. I don't think Sam could have lived with herself. I don't think so.
One boxed question, and it's, do you think Sam would have left her if Cassie hadn't woken up?
Yes.
I kind of think yes, too.
I think it would have been way easier.
It would have killed her to do it, but I think she would have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then maybe she wouldn't have. I don't know.
I
like, I think the second Cassie woke up, the decision was made. No way. You can't leave. No way. But then I think, okay, if you're just leaving, like, a sleeping kid, she's in a coma, like, she's not even aware of what's happening, and it's for the greater good, I think Sam's military would kick in. I think she would.
Yeah. I think she might. I mean, because she almost brought herself to do it when she woke up.
Yeah.
She did. But then,
It seemed like she had the realization of what that possibly meant. And that's part of why she went back down.
Yeah.
But, so we can... When I was trying to pull audio for this, I basically just wanted to pull, like, the entire last 7 minutes of the episode. But then also so much of it is visual as well.
It's really hard because it's just, it is an acting clinic in my opinion. It is just so fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah, so then we get, it starts out as, it's already heartbreaking, Sam's getting in there, and Jack gives her the instructions of, oh, it's going to take you this long to get down, you got 4 minutes to get back up, and you can tell that he's not super pumped about sending her, but I think he also acknowledges that the more people that you send, the more it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, but then there's the moment going down the elevator, and it's already, you can see... Sam is just broken by this situation, and then Cassie wakes up, and it's like, kill me. Are you kidding me? I pulled the clip.
Where are we going?
Please, go back to sleep.
Oh, God. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then she's like, I'm not tired.
Oh.
Are you crying? And it's, oh my gosh.
It is, like, genuinely some of the best television I've ever seen. From, like, the way it was directed and shot, the writing, the acting, all of it. It is, like, because you genuinely do not know what's going to happen. You don't know if Sam's going to leave her. You don't know if this kid's going to explode or not. You don't know what's going to happen. And you're just glued the fuck in because you need to know.
Yeah.
Because now you're emotionally invested.
Yeah. And it really was beautifully shot because then it cuts back up, and the way that they shot the scene of getting all three guys who were waiting and their anxious faces, and it was just such a great shot because you get Teal'c and Daniel, and then Jack, like, steps into frame. Ugh. I noticed that, and I just felt like it really even further sent it home that these guys are also going through something in this moment as well.
Yeah.
So they make it down to the bottom and go into the room, which is, like, makes it so much worse because it's like this horrible, gross, creepy shelter.
Yep.
And Sam sets her down, and I can't remember exactly what I cut it, because there's lots of empty space, so.
I have to go.
You promised you'd never leave me alone.
I'll come back, okay? I'll be back. You're very brave, remember?
I'm very brave.
I have to close the door.
Her name is like a freaking dagger to the chest.
It was already hurting, and then when she yelled at Sam, I was like, but why?
So man, and like, we didn't really talk about it, because it's gonna come up in about 20 seconds, I think, but like, throughout this whole episode, Sam's like mantra to Cassie has been, you're very brave, remember, you're very brave, and like, that's like the last words that she kind of leaves her with, and it's just like, motherfucker.
I know.
Who gave you the right?
Gosh. And that whole scene, oh my gosh, and she's like, you promised you wouldn't leave?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. And then her having to tell her she'll come back, which in that moment was meant to be a lie, but then turns out to be true.
Yes.
Oh my gosh,
it's so good.
And then she gets in the
and
elevator.
She acts her
oh
ass
my
off,
gosh.
So. Oh god.
Amanda Tapping just ripped my freaking heart out already.
Yep.
So then she gets in the she like shuts the thing. She gets in the elevator and has the breakdown, which she is like, very visual. I couldn't.
She like kicks the shit out of the door and like hits the walls and just like slides down and like curls up into like this little ball and is like crying, like
sobbing.
I was gonna say sobbing, but sobbing.
Oh yeah, it is.
And then she goes back,
gut-wrenching. Yeah, so then you see her,
had an epiphany. This episode is so
fucking good, which is why I find it baffling that people don't like this episode, or like it's not a favorite of theirs, because I find it like, even if you didn't like the first 30 minutes, the last 15 are, like, incredible.
Well, I mean, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, though, when you were like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, if you've never seen the episode before, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Because it seems plausible that maybe Sam will. Like, when she's in the elevator sobbing and, like, holding her knees to her chest, it's almost like, holy fucking shit. Like,
she's going to leave her.
These are the stakes of interplanetary travel. This is the price to pay. And like, and there's a small part of me when I was watching, I was like, is this how they're gonna like end up bonding Sam and Jack together? Because they both would have been responsible for the death of a child. And I thought that's where this was going. I thought they were going to make this happen in order to progress this other relationship. And I was like, I'm not ready for this. I don't want it to happen this way. Not this way, please. Not this way. And I was so glad they didn't. We're so close to being done.
I know.
We just have Jack calling his Captain Sam name. And the parking scene.
Did I rewind that like 4 times? Yes. Bet your ass I did.
Because when you Snapchatted me, it was like that moment when your OTP uses like the real first name or something like that. Like that was like the accompanying message with it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, so she's in the elevator. And then she decides to go back.
Yeah, and my mom, when we were watching it, and there's like that moment, my mom's like, she thought of something! and so then she starts going back down, and we cut back up top to the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled that clip.
Jack, she's going back down.
The hell she is.
Captain Carter.
Captain Carter.
Sam, do you read me?
Colonel, I'm staying.
Negative.
Colonel, she's awake.
Oh, God. Captain Carter, I'm ordering you to get back up here right now. Right now.
Are we going to die?
No, we are not going to die.
All right, why don't you guys clear out? Right.
You're both very brave. I love you.
I love you too.
Okay, so how do we want to start unpacking this? So do we want to start with the Jack part? Do we want to start with the Sam part?
Let's work our way up. Let's start with Daniel.
Okay.
And he's the one, so when she says Jack, she's awake, and Daniel's reaction of, oh God.
Yeah.
Which is like, sorry. So yeah, so Daniel acknowledges the horribleness of her waking up.
Kind of giving voice to how we're feeling as an audience too.
Yes. And then we get Jack's reaction.
Which is this almost like panicked, don't do this, like, which, you fucking hypocrite. You would be the first one to like self-sacrifice to like make sure a kid wouldn't be alone. Like,
absolutely. He would not.
Yes. Okay.
He would have done the same thing.
Absolutely.
You're right. But the fact though, it's not him. Right. That's the problem. Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think we can all just take a moment in this critical and upsetting time to acknowledge he uses her name, Sam. It's an important thing to notice.
He did. I feel like he might have thought maybe it might have gotten through to her a little bit more rather than saying Captain Carter if he related to her on a personal level. Like,
yeah. But like, if Sam died, it wouldn't be just like it would affect them.
Yeah.
And also, I love when he's, like, yelling at her through the intercom, and there hits a point where Sam just, like, walks away, like, if I don't respond, you can't yell at me anymore.
Well, and she just wants to be with Cassie.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also another great example of Sam disobeying orders when it suits her. And again, I think we've established a pattern that when it suits Sam, she's more than willing to disobey orders and or regs. I think it's an important thing that we acknowledge and continue to acknowledge on this journey.
Okay. It's noted.
I also like the part when Jack's kind of like, okay guys, y'all can like, it's more of like, y'all can leave now to go be safe. Uh-huh. And they're like, nah, SG-1, bro.
Don't leave like, no one behind.
We're in this together. We're not leaving people behind. Like, we're staying.
He's and great then, moment.
Yes.
They don't even say anything. They just look at him like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, the theme plays, the SG-1 theme plays. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then,
it's beautiful.
To tie this moment together, we've got Sam embracing Cassie and Cassie parroting back their kind of shared mantra. And now it's, we are very brave and I love you. And
I love you.
The I love you kills me. And Sam, without hesitation, I love you too, right back. Oh my God. How could you not like this episode? It's so good.
I think you mentioned that there was something in the companion about this scene.
Okay, so this is kind of long, and I was trying to find like just a paragraph or two to read about it, but honestly, I'm just going to read all of it, and then we can just cut if you want to cut. But I find it very moving.
Okay.
Okay, so the companion says, clearly an emotional episode for the actress, Amanda Tapping retains special memories of some very touching moments during filming. She says, when I was doing the whole crying scene in the elevator, the crew were just so silent on our set, she remembers. I've never heard it that quiet. We were just about to go to lunch and, that day, they just took Grace without even thinking about it. Someone just stood and said, let's take Grace, and we did. I was really touched by that. Although not yet appointed as a creative consultant for the show at the time, Peter DeLuise watched every episode and attests, The director, Mario Azzopardi, is a very passionate, volatile Maltese man, and you can really see his influence in the scene when Carter leaves Cassandra to blow up. It's obvious that she's quite moved, particularly when she's kicking the crap out of the lift. That's one of the moments where you can see Mario's passion come through. The director kept coming up to me saying, okay, do it again. I need more, Tapping agrees. But I was bawling my eyes out already. I was in the darkest place, but he kept on, and finally on the last take, with the cameras rolling, he said, Amanda, you have left this little girl in this horrible place, and you are an evil person. You have left her alone. You are horrible. Well, I just thought, I don't need this. I've already got it figured out. So I turned to him and I yelled, shut up and get out of here. And he said, good. Now we shoot. Afterwards, he came up and said, hey, I got you angry and it was good. But I thought, no, it wasn't. And I felt terrible. Nevertheless, the resulting scene is powerfully effective. For teenage actress Katie Stewart, the episode was also memorable for the extremely gentle treatment she received from the cast. Everyone was very kind and it made me feel very special, she recalls, particularly Richard Dean Anderson. He kept trying to make me laugh, and usually did. He's such a great guy. Amanda and Terrell were very sweet, and they really did make me feel like part of their family, and professionally, watching them work, I learned so much from them. Stewart admits to having some trouble parting from one of the extra cast members. The dog O'Neill gives my character at the end of the show was really, really cute, and I did not want to give him back. And that's the entry. I just thought it was all, like, clearly, Amanda Tapping was very emotional in that episode, and, like, to know that the director was, like, pushing, and, like, it came across on screen.
Yeah.
For sure.
I like that he was at least straightforward with, like, okay, we're gonna make you angry.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that that was kind of a necessary part of emotion for her to be carrying there, too, because, like, yeah, she's the one having to leave this little girl behind, but it's not her fault. Like, right. It's the Goa'uld who engineered this horrible situation.
Right.
And so I do like that there's a frisson of anger with her horrifying sadness and self-loathing.
Yeah. And, like, helplessness, too.
Yeah.
And that definitely came through. I felt totally. That it came through in that scene, for sure. Yeah.
And so we kind of flash up. Like, we think that's the end. And we flash up to Jack. He's, like, looking at his watch. Like, the countdown's mm-hmm. beginning. And 4, 3, 2, 1, there should have been a kaboom. And yeah. SG-1 kind of looks around at each other like, wait, nothing happened.
Yeah. Yep. And so they're like, what's going on? And we get...
Captain Carter? Can you hear me? Sam. Can you hear me?
I love the way he...
Can we just talk about how his voice completely yes. changes when he says Sam?
Yes, we can! Take it away, Melanie. Let's talk about it.
It just... It went from, like, you know, super serious military real quick. You know, Captain Carter. And then it was, like, super soft.
Yes.
Like, Sam.
Yes.
Are you there? And, like... Why did we have tonal shift?
I know.
I don't know.
I know. But I really enjoyed it. Reason. Pick me.
Jess. Crazy girl in the back.
Yep, the answer is there. I'd love. I mean, not yet, but we're on our way.
I don't think we're there yet, but okay.
Well, and we've already established how much the team cares about each other yes. across the board.
Yeah.
That's fair.
We're fresh off fire and water. Where we've got this, like, bonding moment. There's been a lot of hugging, some emotional bonding. Here we are again, another very emotional episode. Who am I to say that she needs a shoulder to lean on? And Jack O'Neill has some very strong shoulders. Who am I to say that?
I think you're the expert, is what you are.
I'll take it.
That's what I'm, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then Sam responds and tells him that nothing happened and that she couldn't leave her. I didn't pull that whole clip because there's a lot and I'd already pulled so much.
We can summarize.
Yeah, so basically she's like, I couldn't do it, and it's really heart-wrenching the way that she's like, of course she couldn't. Yeah. And that she just knew that she had, and she gives her reasoning, basically.
Such a pile of bullshit.
It's funny because I know. It wasn't that logical of a decision. We all know that. But she has the logical reasoning of like, well, when we got her far enough away from the Stargate, she woke up. So I thought maybe she's not going to blow up. Like,
that is the equivalent of like someone who didn't do their reading getting called on in class and is pulling up what they think like general common sense and context clues. And we're whipping an answer out of our ass to appease the professor. Sam is that student.
I mean, you're right.
But it worked.
It did.
And, I'm not questioning it.
And I mean, I don't know if I would have risked my life on that.
No.
But
to me, it's like my basketball teammates in high school when they would take really stupid shots sometimes, and you'd be like, damn it, what? Oh, nice. It went in. Good job.
Good job. Yep, that was the plan.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah. I know that. Yeah.
It's like that a little bit with Sam, like him being like, damn it, Sam, get back here.
Yeah.
Oh, she didn't blow up. Okay. That's good. Great. Call.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And
I love Daniel's celebration when she like tells them what's going on and Daniel like kind of hits Teal'c in the chest.
Yes, it's very cute. Like, this was a great episode. Like, for every character, it was a good episode.
Yeah, it's Jack Light and Teal'c Light because they're just kind of...
But that we finally get a CM-heavy episode that isn't her being sexually objectified and or assaulted. Her being some cableman. Her talking about her abusive past boyfriend. Et cetera.
It is. It is a nice change of pace for the Sam-focused episodes. Yeah. And... so then the next scene we get is the park.
It's my favorite scene. I'm so happy we're talking about it.
Which is a pretty massive tonal shift from what we just went through.
I know. And it immediately cuts to the park. Like, there's no
And it's like no happy morning. Music. Yes.
And they're all in their like super hot 90s civvies.
Also, can I just say
Daniel's wearing like khakis and a button, and I'm like, dude, you're at the fucking park.
And his button up's so big. It's like
Sam looks like a 90s like suburban mom.
Sam looks like Sarah.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does.
Okay, I'm just saying that was almost the exact same outfit Sarah was wearing in Cold Lazarus.
Yes.
Who am I to say that that was purposely done? I don't know. But
Well spotted.
So Sam and Daniel are walking, swinging Cassie between them, and Daniel's like, oh, you're a little too big for this. Oh my gosh, it's so adorable. Again.
How can you?
Like, they do kind of pair Sam and Daniel as her parents in this episode.
They do.
They're like the mom and dad.
They do.
Yeah. And then, I guess, cool Uncle Jack swoops in with the dog.
With a Shiba Inu. Yes.
So fucking cute.
Super cute. Not the easiest dogs, though. Janet's gonna love that.
I almost got the impression, though, like, when Jack took the dog back and then talked to Teal'c, like, Teal'c, what do you know about walking dogs? And he was like, nothing. I wonder if, like, Jack just took the dog back, like, my dog now. Cassie can come visit the dog.
I mean, I'm sure...
I have the clip of the Earth Rule line.
Oh, yeah, because it's so cute. Also, play the clip, and then I'll have my thoughts.
We have a rule here on Earth. Every kid has got to have a dog. This is a dog. And he's yours.
It's so pure. Oh my god.
Huh. Great reminder that Jack O'Neill was a great dad.
Oh yeah.
And like, is so good with kids and like, would have gotten Charlie a dog. Like, these are all the things like... Oh, I want to know what Jack thinks about all of this. Like, oh.
Yeah. I will say that, though, a dad who gets a dog for the kid without talking to the mom, not the best.
Personal experience.
We talked about it. And then we get another little moment between the other three while Jack is giving the dog to Cassie.
I can't explain it, Daniel. I just knew.
A mother's instinct, perhaps.
Subtle, but no.
But what if Sam had adopted Cassie?
There's a fix that you could follow called "The Love Doesn't Kill You, Makes You Stronger." Follows a very similar concept of Sam having a kid during the entirety of SG-1. I recommend it highly.
Yeah, it's not Cassie.
It's not Cassie, but it's good. But
it's got Sam with a kid.
But, I mean, it would present challenges. I mean, I think it's kind of narratively, it makes sense to say that Janet is
I completely agree. I was just saying.
Yeah. I like that they let Sam, like, have those, like, have the instincts to be good with the kid and bond with her and not feel like she couldn't do it. Like, I was glad that Sam didn't feel like she couldn't act that way with Cassie, because all the men on base would then be like, oh, she's just a mom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She should just be a mom. And so then I'm also kind of glad that at the end of the episode, she's like, I'm not her mom and I can't be her mom.
Yeah.
And someone else is going to take that on. And it's like, women can love kids and they can be good with kids. And that doesn't mean that being a mom is the only thing they can do.
Right. Yeah.
Like, so I liked that was kind of the outcome here.
Yeah, me too.
For sure.
Also, just like as a side note, this is the exact kind of trope that I love reading about in fic and or watching in other sci-fi shows. Like, OTP finds random orphan child, alien child, whatever. One of them imprints. They have to, like, try and find a way to, like, rehome this child. It is, like, one of my favorite tropes, and I was just very delighted to see it in season one.
Yeah. Yeah, so then the episode ends with
yes,
Jack taking the dog for a walk, which means carrying the dog as he walks away.
And Tilk being very interested in this whole dog concept.
Yeah, and they leave Sam alone with Cassie, and we get the discussion that she's from Toronto.
I thought that's so cute.
And the Stargate is secret, yeah. I love how, like, she's smart enough to pick up on it right away, too. And she's like, what are those? Mm-hmm. Oh, those are swings. We didn't have those in Toronto.
It's such a good ending.
Yeah. But then it's like, again, we go back to the, like, super upbeat, like, happy musical score. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you were just ripping my heart out 4 minutes ago.
How dare you?
Don't pretend
that this never happened. Yeah. But that's how the episode ends, and it's fucking adorable.
It was a good one.
All right, let's rank this bitch.
Read it.
Go for it, Jess.
I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 7.
Solid.
It is the episode that locked me into watching Stargate. Like, I liked previous episodes. Like, I liked Fire and Water. This is the episode that made me feel invested in all the characters. It made me feel, like, satisfied with writing. It made me eager to skip to the next episode. Like, I was ready to keep watching. I also like that it's Sam heavy. It was emotional. Like, the story was good. I got one of my biggest critiques earlier when I was watching the first time was that I felt like Jack was too, like, almost one dimensional. And I felt like I got a little bit more depth. Even though it was small, I got it from him here. But he's, like, an astronaut kind of geek, or an astronomer geek. And, I just love this episode. The acting is incredible. The writing is incredible. I'm very happy. I'm only knocking it a half point for my earlier comment, which is I thought they could have done a better job about making the ties between, like, the planet and Cassie and the overall goal of the Goa'uld a little more clear. Like, it eventually became clear, but I wish it had been a little more upfront. So, yeah, 6.5 out of 7 for me.
I would give it a 6 out of 7. Jess basically just said everything. Sorry. About it. I mean, the acting was great. The writing was great, as Jess has already said. Yeah, I mean, Jess, like I said, basically just hit the nail on the head with that one. There's not really anything else to say about it. I do agree with you, though, on the fact that they could have made everything a little bit more clear. I felt like there was a lot of guessing going on when you were trying to figure out what the plot was, kind of. But yeah, so 6 out of 7.
I feel like this is almost 2 episodes to me, mm-hmm. where, like, the first half is, like, a 4 out of 7 because the pacing is off and there's some of those really uncomfortable 90s tropey moments that it was really driven home to me watching it with my parents and being, like, they don't like sci-fi very much, and it was, like, so sci-fi tropey. Mm-hmm. And then the second half of the episode is, like, 7 out of 7. Emotional content, great character beats, awesome relationship moments, incredible acting, well directed, just like perfection. And so it's like the first half is a 4 and the second half is a 7, so it's like a 5.5 I guess.
Okay.
For me. But then the way that it, like, at the end, I'm always like, oh, that's such a great episode. But when you start it, it feels a little different. And so I guess overall it lands at like a 5.5. But I love this episode. For the same reasons you guys said. And I love Daniel. And I love the relationship dynamics and the team and how much they love each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Air Metal Award.
Sam?
Yeah, I was going to say Sam, or part of me wants to give it to Cassie, too, for the sheer amount of trauma she went through and survived and came out a normal kid.
Sam and Cassie.
I'll give it to Kay. Sam and Cassie.
Yeah.
We've done that before. We've given it to, like, 4 different people before, so I feel like giving it to Sam and Cassie is...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Jack and Sam got the Air Medal Award together in season 2, so...
It's true. They did. We're not there yet, but we'll get there.
I can't wait. Guys, more importantly, Solitudes is in 3 episodes, and I'm very excited.
We're also, like, on the way up, too. Like, we're, like we, yes. like, we were, like, slowly trucking, and then we kind of hit a couple, and then we kind of went trucking again, and then now we're, like, just, like, on the up and up.
There's a lot of really good episodes coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ready.
I mean, we passed the Hathor speed bump.
Yes.
Moving forward.
Speed bump. We have got, speaking of good episodes, we've got Korai coming up next week, Tilk Heavy, which is very, very good. And if you love Singularity and you can't wait to fangirl about it with us, or if you hate Singularity and you don't know what the fuck we're talking about, please let us know by emailing us at chevronslock7@gmail.com or tweeting at us at chevronslock7. You can find me, Jess, on Twitter at Prof Tennant or on Tumblr at Professor Tennant.
You can find me, Melanie, at on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN, or you can find me on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
You can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils or on Tumblr at Pianosa 2 to the Fighting 8.
Close the iris, and we'll see you next week.
That's a wrap.
Showtime.
Oh, wait, no, not that one.
Colonel.
It's showtime.
So good.
I know that's weird at the end, but it's like I'm just gonna loop it like 4 times.
Colonel, there's someone in the bushes and they won't come out. What is that?
Okay, so I'm gonna stop recording.
Okay, me too.
Yeah, stop recording.